Okay, so I get up in the morning. So, you know, in St. Louis here, we have a foot of snow on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Didn't you say you were shoveling snow today, right?
Yeah, I would say maybe 8 inches where I was, but yeah, you know, serious amounts of snow.
Yeah, it might have been a foot, but it settled. I don't know. But yeah, a lot of snow. So I get out there, I got to dig out my car, right? So we got a place to go this weekend. So I'm out digging out my car out of the driveway. You know, and I was having a good time. My three-year-old was out there. I got him like a little shovel. So he was digging up little shovelfuls.
He felt like he was helping.
He was like so into it. Yeah, he was helping, right? So he's like, he would just pick it up and like scatter it around. His thing was like he would throw it up into the air, which was really fun. And eventually he just like picking up chunks of snow and throwing them at me. So
also fun.
Yeah. So we're out there for, you know, it might have been like 45 minutes. I don't know. It took me a little while to clean off the driveway. But I had started up the car to heat up the windows so I could scrape it. And as we're getting ready to go inside, I wanted to get back into my car because I was going to drive over to Starbucks, actually get my wife a latte. And I realized I did not have my keys. And I was like, wait a minute, I just heated up my car. Where the fuck are my keys? So I look all over the house and I'm checking my pockets. I'm looking under the seats of the car. And then it was like, oh my God, I had them in my pocket. And I'm out here like playing around with my son and throwing snow at each other. You know, they fell out of my goddamn pocket. And you got to understand, like there were just piles of snow everywhere. Like we were just flinging snow.
You've literally just been flinging snow at everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, it could be anywhere out here, and I'm not going to find it for like a week.
Isn't that a weird thing about modern technology, where like because they've made it like, you know, wireless now, you turn on your car and like you could have been driving the car around the corner,
sure,
and it would have cut out before you would realize.
Well, if it's a key fob, right? No, I have like an ignition key. So I actually have to put the key into the thing and turn it to start it up.
That's honestly, that's a blast. Because for me, I have a fob. And so in theory, I could have started the car and started driving and not even realized.
Yeah. And then it just shuts off like in the middle of the road. Right. That would be great. No, well, I'm retro. Okay. I'm retro. No, I have an ignition key from all the way back at like 2017. But
classic.
So yeah, I could not find the goddamn key. And so I'm freaking out because we got stuff to do this weekend. My son's got his Pinewood Derby tomorrow morning. My wife's got to get out. I got to go to work on Monday and all this stuff. You know, I don't know what the hell to do if I lost the key to my car. I've never lost the key to my car, you know? So I call the dealership and they're like, yeah, we can do it if you tow it here. They're like, otherwise, you know,
and carry it on your shoulders.
Right. So they told me to call an automotive locksmith who can come in and make a key for like $150. You know, they'll make you a key. And so I was like, well, shit, I guess I got to do that. So I'm like, I'm calling around to try to find people, but you know, it's there's snow everywhere, so nobody's like answering, and
everybody's looking for their keys in snow.
Yeah,
everybody's in the same situation.
So in the meantime. In the meantime, I'm trying to figure out like a backup plan. I'm like, what do we do if I can't find my keys? My car is just going to be sitting here all weekend, right? So I figured I would try to dig out my wife's car. It is a narrow driveway. And so like the cars have to park in front of each other. So my wife is parked up by the garage and I'm parked behind her. I can't get her out because next to the driveway is a hill, right? You know, the hill is just like covered with snow. It's a slight grade. It's not like super steep or anything, but you know,
it's steep enough. I've seen this.
I was
hill.
Looking at it. I was like, I'm going to get stuck, you know, if I try to drive on this thing. But I'm like, well, shit, what am I going to do this week? I got to get out of here. And I was like, you know what? I bet I could do it. I bet I could scrape all of this goddamn snow off my lawn and get the car out around this thing. And so I just start like, at this point, I'm just like pissed off because this is so stupid. So I just start like shoveling snow like crazy. And I clear out this like 10-foot wide path for this car to get around the other one and drive through my lawn, right? And I'm sitting there looking at it. I'm like, you know, I think this is going to work. I think it's going to work. The one area where I was a little concerned was there's a tree in my yard right next to the driveway. And between this tree and my car was about an 8-foot gap.
Right.
And so you'd have to just like narrowly squeeze the car through this tiny gap in order to get around my car and onto the driveway. Okay. So I was like, all right, I think I can do this, but I'm definitely going to need my wife to get back here and, you know, guide me through this narrow window that I've got here. We dislodge the car from the snowbank that it's in. So I'm backing up. We finally managed to do it. I am right in this gap. Okay. This like 8 foot threading this fucking needle with this SUV. Okay. I'm angling it, I think, just right. And I'm looking on both sides of the car. I'm like, she looks at it. I look at it and she's just like, you're good. Straight back. Just come on, straight back. And I'm looking, I'm like, are you sure I'm okay with this tree over here? And she leans over and she's like, yeah, you're fine. Just pull it straight back.
For context for listeners who may not have actually seen this actual setup, the tree and the angle you're going down, you're not going straight down the grade of the hill. You're kind of going at an angle as you're describing this now, right?
Right.
So
yeah, so I'm going at an angle.
So there's like an angle that you're going at that is cross to the actual grade of the hill.
Right. Yeah, it's at about a 45 degree angle to the actual hill.
Yes.
So it's like
a diagonal down the hill.
As a reminder, this is on snow. This is like on snow path.
A foot of snow.
Yes, there's a foot of snow. There's just giant snowbanks everywhere. And the car is like constantly getting stuck and I'm having to punch forward or back to like dislodge myself. Okay. So here we are. I wonder how this is going to end.
This is going to be great.
Yeah. So she leans over. She's like, no, this is fine. This is fine. Just punch it just straight back. So I'm like, okay. So I do it. And I hear this and I look over. What she had not seen is the tree has a branch sticking out of it that is very low to the ground. And because she was not standing on that side of the car, she forgot about the branch. She did not see it and how close it was to the car. Okay. So as I punch it, right, I'm trying to get through here. This branch rams into the door of the car and puts a huge dent into the side of it. Like huge dent. Okay. So I'm looking around. I'm like, oh shit. Yeah, so we get out of the car like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Cause you got to remember this thing is stuck here. Like I can't just go forward or backwards because it's in a snowbank. Not only is the car stuck on the side of this hill, nudged up against this tree, I had the windows down so that I could hear her. We were yelling at each other. So the window is down. The door is now dented. And I can't even put the window up because the door has been smashed and it is squeezing the window of the door. So it's like 15 degrees outside.
It is. And
we now have a busted window on my car. You know, on one of my car, the other family car has no keys. And okay, so my cars are like completely fucked up now. Just like that. Eventually the neighbors wander over and wonder why I'm standing in my front yard screaming profanities at my car.
I was going to say, I'm like, after listening to you for 45 minutes shouting at either your wife or the car or the snow.
Right.
They eventually get curious and they're like, do I need to intervene or do I need to call the police?
Well, and you have to understand how this looks, okay? Because
you're in a very quiet, nice suburban area.
It's a very quiet suburban neighborhood. These are relatively small houses. And there is a fucking car just cockeyed in somebody's front lawn, right? And yeah, we're out there like yelling at each other and we're yelling at the cars. The neighbors walk over. They're like, hey, what's going on? You guys need some help? What do you need there?
Howdy their neighbor.
Yeah, right. One guy actually walked up and he goes, hey, why don't you just move the car that was behind it? Because then you wouldn't have to drive around it like that. You could just move that car. The guy actually said that.
Did you want to be, well, I mean, I don't even know what you said to this guy, but I'm sure.
I was very friendly. And I said, well, you know, I lost the keys to that one. So he's like, oh, shit. So yeah, I got these two fucked up cars now. And so we're looking around and I don't even know what to do. Because of the snow, I can't get away from this tree. You know, the car is just, it's going right. to, it has basically slid into the tree. So I'm standing there with my wife and our couple of neighbors, and I'm just like, we're just going to have to cut that branch off the tree.
Wow, yeah.
And sure enough, one of my neighbors had a, like a tree saw.
Dude.
And he immediately comes over and just starts getting to work on the thing. And
this is, before you even continue, I just love the fact that this is what it is to live in the Midwest, right? You're like, my neighbors,
oh, yeah,
casually
yeah.
taking interest in what I'm doing, happen to have a tree saw on hand. That is, I had just moved here, I would be like, that is bullshit. That is completely ridiculous. I guarantee I could go right now and I could walk out of my house and I could like knock on somebody's door and get a tree saw at this time of night. Like, I know I could do it.
Well, and here's the thing, like, as we're doing the tree saw, okay, so we cut the branch off the tree. Takes a little while, you know, we make some big cuts. It is literally like half the tree, okay, because it's a relatively small tree. So unfortunately, it is an even smaller tree now. It's roughly half the size of what it was before.
All right, Pete.
But so we cut this branch. It's completely cut away from the tree. Now, the door is still fucked up, right? The door looks terrible. But at least I now have this, you know, clearance here. Get in the car, back the car up, and it works perfectly. You know, it works exactly like my wife thought it would before she realized the branch was there. It just goes right through, okay?
So what you're saying now, in her defense, it was the branch's fault.
It was the branch's fault. It was not her fault. And I probably should have paid closer attention to the tree myself. But we get out and, you know, now my other car is behind the car with no key. But now it has a fucked up door and the window won't roll up in 15 degree weather. So I turn around and there is another neighbor standing there with, I shit you not, a fucking metal detector. Because it's the Midwest and, you know, people just have shit like that in the garage.
This is just part two of 20 of, like, things that your neighbor has that you were, like, thinking could only be bought in a specialist shop, like, for, you know, with a year's worth of notice. Things around, like, just things around grilling that I never even knew existed that are, like, speciality tools that require, like, you know, a year's worth of work to craft the specific, you know, there's only one place in the world where they do this type of, I don't know, instrument or accessory, and your neighbor has it, and it's just there, and they just love it.
Right.
I love it.
So anyway, I put my wife to work on, you know, trying to figure this thing out, how it works, and try to find my keys. I find an auto body shop, because I figured now the main thing is, you know, I got to get a key for my car, but now I got to get this fucking window fixed because it's 15 degrees outside, you know, and the window literally will not roll up on the car. So I call around to auto body shops to see who can get me in today. I finally find one and I'm like, I'm looking at Yelp and I'm like, fucking sweet. This is only like 3 minutes from my house. Get my stuff, jump in the car, and I drive over there and the fucking place is closed down. Like closed, like it is, like the windows are papered up, and I'm like, what the hell is this? You know,
now we got to give the flip side of living in the Midwest. Yelp does not work as well in the Midwest as it does in San Francisco.
Yelp does not work as well in the Midwest. That's correct. Yeah. So I get back on there and I call them and I'm like, where the fuck are you guys located? Because I'm at your place and it's closed. And they're like, oh yeah, that's our old place. Yeah, we haven't changed Yelp. Sorry about that. We got to update that. We have a new address. So I was like, all right, what's the address? And they gave it to me. It is 30 minutes down the fucking interstate.
Oh, again, for context in the Midwest, a hop, skip, and a jump.
Just a hop, skip, and a jump.
Just a mere 50 miles away. Because obviously that's
right.
In the same,
right.
Because it's going to serve the same customers. Right? That's why they moved to serve the same customer base and just have a nicer little location. And 30 minutes down the interstate is just the same thing.
Well,
really.
30 minutes around here is, people think that's a long way, you know, if you're going to drive someplace.
Fair,
whereas, yeah. Like, if you live in L.A., 30 minutes, it'll get you, like, 5 miles, maybe.
Fair,
you
know? Fair.
So I look at the damn map, and I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Because, my window will not roll up, and it's 15
so
degrees
outside.
So you
would be going down the highway where there is plenty of snow-related obstacles and debris that could be going in through your window. as you're.
Yeah, and I did. And I'm telling you what, I'm like driving down the interstate, and there are like trucks.
Hang on, you
like,
did it. So you did this.
I fucking did it because they told me they could get me in immediately, and I'm like, well, I got to get this goddamn window fixed. So I drove there, and there were like semi trucks in front of me, and they're like flinging nasty salt water, you know, and it's all over the car. It's getting in the window and everything. And I mean, half an hour later, I get to the goddamn auto place and they're looking at it. It was like the first good thing to happen that day. They look at it and they're like, yeah, we can fix that. It'll take us like 10 minutes. Cause it was just a dent. Beautiful. The door was just dented. It was dented and it was pinching the window. So the window wouldn't roll up. I said, I don't care if it looks like shit.
But the window wasn't smashed.
No. The window wasn't smashed. Yeah, it just wouldn't roll up because the door.
Okay, because that's what I was thinking you were going to have to do. You would have to replace the window and the mechanism.
Well, I was worried about that. Right. No. All I needed it to do was like open up enough to let me roll up the window. Yeah. So, yeah, the guy's like, just go wait in the office. We'll get it done. They didn't even like take the car into the garage. They just came outside like where I'd parked it, and they just popped the door out enough to get the window back up there. So I was like, all right. I didn't know how much it would cost. The last time I got a door fixed, it cost me a couple $100. So I was just like, all right, whatever. Guy comes in and he's like, listen, sorry you had to drive all the way out here. I tell you what, it's on us today. Just give us a 5-star review on Google.
Oh, man. Now I can't even put that down to the Midwest. That's just beautiful.
I was like, that's great. That was just great. So
that's. Otherwise, I think you would have been chewing steel and glass on the drive back home. You would have just been like so annoyed.
I was completely prepared to pay up a couple $100 for what that guy spent 10 minutes doing, you know, and somebody else might have charged me that. I don't know, but
that's
didn't.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I can say,
I'll give them a 5-star review at this point.
Do you need auto body work?
Boy, howdy.
Did you lose your car keys in your driveway and fuck up your other car trying to get around it in a snowstorm?
Have you driven into a branch of a tree through a snowbank by any chance lately? Because if you have,
I have to recommend Champion Auto Body of Baldwin, Missouri. Let me tell you, folks, they do great work. They are professional. They are fast.
And, efficient. They are quick.
Efficient, extremely courteous. I'm telling you what. A little bit of a drive to get out to fucking Baldwin, but let me tell you, if you're up for it.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So, yeah, I get my car fixed up. I drive, you know, half an hour back to my house. And
with the window
my wife is... My wife has been had no luck with this metal detector. Like, she can't figure out how to use it. She's like, the thing just keeps dying on me, and it picks up. Apparently, I think there might be like rebar in the concrete under the driveway, because it's any time that you use the thing on the driveway, it was just going nuts. You know, so I have metal under the asphalt on my driveway.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I was like, all right, let me take a shot at it. I'd been talking to this automotive locksmith guy, and he was going to charge me like $150. He was getting ready to come out. So I pick it up and I immediately try to use it. And the thing is just, it's janky as fuck. I don't know what the hell is wrong with it. I look at it. I'm like, you know what? What if I just put a new battery into the goddamn thing? Like, my wife had not thought to do that. So I happen to have a 9-volt battery. I stick a 9-volt battery in the thing and I turn it on. Hey, guess what? It works fucking great now. All I needed was a goddamn battery. So I get out there, and as long as I'm staying away from the driveway, it seems to be working okay. I was out there for maybe 5 minutes, and sure enough, the thing starts making... It was making little ding-ding sounds all the time, and then it made a weird sound. It was like, woo, woo, you know. I poke at the snow a little bit, and I see a little glint of metal.
This feels like an action-adventure thing, like Secret of Monkey Island, or what's that NES game, Dead Tomb? Where, like,
right. You
see a little shining thing in the corner, and you're like, oh, I should inspect that.
Use the shovel, you know?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's like, look, use.
So yeah, I used the metal detector, and I found something, and so I used the shovel, and I found my goddamn car key.
Yay!
About a foot from my fucking car door.
Naturally.
And it was under about half an inch of snow. it had snow piled onto it and it had been packed down a little bit. So I would not have found it, you know, without the metal detector. But
your 3-year old had successfully hidden it under.
It's very possible. That's what happened. Yeah, it's totally possible. So anyway, yeah, that's the capstone of the whole fucking day, is that I wasted about 6 hours like getting all this stuff done and driving around and all this crap. And now I have a dent in the door of my car that wasn't there before. But other than that, it's pretty much everything is back to normal. So,
well, I mean, to be fair, it sounds like there's very little financial cost to the day. It's just your time.
Yeah, it didn't really cost me that much, right? Well, I did. So my wife, after all this shit, was like, I'm not cooking dinner. So we did get Indian takeout. So I did have to pay for that.
What did you get for takeout?
There's a Nepalese food place.
Oh, nice.
Which Nepalese food is basically Indian food. So that's my story.
That's an awesome story. That's a fucking amazing
Thank you.
Story.
I wanted to get that out. I really wanted to get that out. I can tell. Like, you know, I should just speak this into a microphone. This needs to be captured for posterity.
I appreciate you allowing me to interrupt you with mild observations, but yes, this is a good story. This is
nice. Thank you.
But here, let's talk about some games, dude. Let's chat.
Yeah.
Dude, I have to say, the Discord is an infinite source of hilarity and entertainment for me.
Well, I think the format of it is, it's basically text messaging. It's very quick and informal, and it's not like Twitter where, like, literally everybody can see it and any fucking rando can jump into the conversation, which always adds a level of stress to me. If it's a Discord for a podcast like ours that has, you know, a few dozen listeners, you know, everybody there is going to be on the same page. These are people who, you know, you can probably hang out with, right? Or at least on the internet, in an internet forum.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know,
it
everybody
have to be
here.
Super deep. It's just like when you come, you've got that kind of perspective and you're like engaging in that particular way.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's worked out really well. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, and it's going to keep growing. I mean, I can see it. Like, I especially like, with the Witch and Wiz, like, stuff that we're going to be doing for the next episode, people just already kind of getting into it. Like, I love seeing people contribute in that channel, you know, that activity around, like, what are we going to do next? And it being a club, like, you know, it being not just we're sitting here reviewing stuff. Like, it's much more of a kind of communal thing.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to do with the podcast, was not just the three of us, but like a whole community of people just kind of playing along. That's why with this format, like, we could have guests on or something like that. It's just about, I've said this before, but we're not trying to be game critics here. We're just playing the games and just bullshitting about it. I want it to be really low pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, so here's my idea. So Jordan Davis, Spacecraft, Mr. Spacecraft, Raft or not, gave me this idea. So we were talking on Discord. He just recently bought a Switch. So he has not really played any modern games. I think he said the last time that he played any games was maybe like the PlayStation era. And I was thinking about that. I was thinking about some other folks who I've seen on Video Game Sage, or Sages now, whatever it's called. I mean, these are fans of retro games. They'll play homebrew games, but they, you know, there's a guy on there. He's like, look, I really enjoyed the NES and everything before that. And that's all I want to play. I mean, these guys play video games all the fucking time, but they only ever play like NES games. That's it. And that's all they've been playing for 35 years. And they're happy with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you've been playing retro games and you want to, you know, just kind of dip your toe into the more modern stuff, I think it's a fucking fantastic time to do that. I think that there are so many wonderful indie games out there that are pitched towards fans of retro games. I really do think it's kind of like a golden age for that style of game. There is so much good content out there. It is fucking mind-blowing to me.
Mm.
And I really feel like the Switch is so versatile. It's for all types of people. Like, my kids have it and they love it. And they play all these AAA first-party Nintendo games. Yoshi's Crafted World or Luigi's Mansion or Mario Odyssey or all this stuff. They love that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's loaded with indie games. It's got tons of ports of retro games. It's got retro compilations, and some of them are really well done. And I just think that's a fantastic console for that kind of game, you know, and for retro game fans to go from Super Nintendo NES era into the Switch, I think is actually a pretty seamless transition. I think it can be if you know what to look for. So I thought, you know, if we're just going to bullshit about something with like zero research put in, I could talk about retro indie games, you know, and some of them that I've played over the last 10 years that I really enjoyed. If that's the kind of thing that you're interested in.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, I think the Switch is obviously a great console. I mean, there's the obvious links to the fact that there is a virtual SNES and a virtual NES on the Switch, so you can buy the original games. So that's licensed by Nintendo, because after decades of Nintendo refusing to acknowledge that people still wanted to play those games and, you know, be able to use them on modern hardware, they finally got used to that. So that's a step in the right direction. Kind of tentatively they did that with the Wii, but like the Switch is definitely a much more mature version of that. So
yeah, we had Virtual Console, and I really felt like it never quite lived up to its expectations.
No, it definitely, it was hobbled, I would say, at best. It just didn't really have the full support of Nintendo, whereas now it's like the Nintendo shop is a first-class citizen on your Switch. Like, you are buying modern games and retro games through that Nintendo shop, whereas with the Wii, it was more like, well, I mean, if you want to buy a Wii game, you go to the store, you go to GameStop, you buy a disc, you put that in your Wii, and then there's this other place that's like, almost felt like that video rental store, like, behind the curtain. Like, if you know, you want to see the other things that we've got here, it was kind of a little bit, you know, hidden away. Whereas with the Switch, it's much more like a first-class citizen.
Yeah, the Virtual Console had some ports of older games. I mean, it kind of had a weird selection. But yeah, the WiiWare, like indie games that were just made for the Wii, some really strange stuff on there. I don't know. And stuff that you can't play anymore. You can only find it on the Wii Virtual Console, which is shut down now.
So yeah, which is kind of sad.
It is. That's why I buy physical copies of games, because I'm tired of that shit happening. So I guess some games that I, you know, we talked about in the last episode. We talked about Streets of Rage 4.
Always a great one.
And Fight and Rage. Yes, both of those are really good.
So, I mean, I think those are coming from that kind of River City kind of gaming, you know, heritage.
Yeah, beat 'em ups. Right.
Yeah. But like, well, I mean, but like, not beat 'em ups, like Street Fighter beat 'em ups. Beat 'em ups like platforming, like adventure beat 'em ups. Almost like, I would almost call them arcadey, because what they remind me the most of are, I mean, River City obviously is like, River City Ransom is the full name.
Yeah, right.
So what River City Ransom feels like to me is like the home console version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game and the Simpsons arcade game.
Right, yeah. Well, and the Simpsons arcade game never got a home port.
Exactly, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Those games were multiplayer in the arcade in a way the home console couldn't do. But now you can actually do much more of that multiplayer experience on the home console. So that's something that I think is appealing to people who are like, oh yeah, I always loved that kind of game, and I wish I could have three or four friends playing it at the same time. Guess what? Now we can do that.
Yeah, and Streets of Rage on multiplayer, I think as we can attest, is extremely fun. Like, the game is fantastic by itself, but like, with multiplayer, it takes it to another level.
So. Absolutely.
Well, and a game like River City Girls, I think, really does want to be played with two people. It's just not quite as...
It doesn't feel as fun at all. Streets of Rage 4 is fun whether you're alone or with friends. But I think, River City Girls is probably a more fun experience with multiple players.
Fight and Rage actually has a thing where you can add AI companions.
Oh, nice.
So if you have no friends... You can make friends on the computer.
You can have computer
friends. Artificial friends. Yes, and so you can pretend that you're not alone.
That's very thoughtful of them.
It's very nice. See, it's retro, but with modern comforts. So,
but that's it. Like, I think that's what you're saying, is that like, you're not telling people who like these retro games, like, oh, you should just go and play a modern game. It's like, here's the things that I believe you would like from these retro games transposed to a modern setting.
Right. Well, so let's go back. Like, if I think he said, so it was like PlayStation and Wii were kind of the last generations that Jordan Davis played. So, I'm going to go all the way back, because I really think indie games, I think you can draw a line at like Cave Story, which I'm not even sure right now.
I keep thinking of that game as just a real line in the sand.
Yeah, I think it came out in the early 2000s. Yeah. And it is a Metroidvania light, I would say. It's like Metroidvania-ish. I didn't do a whole lot of backtracking, I think. It's been several years since I played it, but...
Yeah, I only played about halfway through it at the time, and that was like a year after it came out.
Yeah, I played sort of the, I guess, the remastered version. Like, it still has retro-style graphics, but they're not quite as, like, chonky as the old ones.
Yeah, it was super chonky. I mean, you'd boot this in, and you really felt like... It was almost like a DOS game. It felt like it was really, like, blocky graphics.
We got an update where I think the graphics look more like Super Nintendo era. But, yeah, before that, it was very pixelated, right?
Yeah.
But really, just a really pleasant game. Just in, you know, not a game that I would probably go back to and play that much again, but just a really well done Metroidvania style game. And like that was at a point where the Metroidvania was just not a very common genre. I love that style of game. I was never that into Super Metroid, but Castlevania Symphony of the Night changed my life in terms of video games. It was a complete epiphany playing that game. And I had been looking for an experience like that on a home console or on my computer for years, you know, because really if you wanted to play a Metroidvania, you could play the Castlevania stuff on handheld, you know,
right.
Which was, those games were okay. None of them, I think, were quite at the level of Symphony of the Night, but they weren't bad. I finally, with Cave Story, I was like, oh, good. Here's like a good meat and potatoes Metroidvania style game that you can really enjoy. And what's funny is of all of the indie games that I think Cave Story inspired, it sort of ushered in this tidal wave of Metroidvania games to where now I have played so many Metroidvania games over the last 10 years that have come after Cave Story. I'm sick of them. I'm so fucking sick of Metroidvanias. It's like, you know, it's like eating your favorite food and eating it so much that you can't stand it anymore. That's what it feels like.
But there's two things about that I think are really interesting. Number one, the Metroidvania style game was never good on PC before that. It was like a classic failing of PC games to be able to, like, they just couldn't do Metroidvania. Like that platform action adventure thing, they just sucked. They all sucked really bad. And I have a deep affection for some PC platformers like Commander Keen, because I would have played that when I was younger. But I can readily admit, like, it just was not on the same level by a long shot. And then after it, it just like everything changed. People had this completely different perception. People realized that they could make these games very effectively. And one of the things that I feel, this is not substantiated, this is pure opinion, but from my perspective, being somebody who was really interested in PC gaming, there was this kind of feeling where like game studios made games and then indie people made mods. They would make mods of Doom maps or, you know, hacks of Diablo or mods. It's just the, you know, all these kind of weird things where they would, the WAD thing. And it would be a great, really rich community. And there would be a lot of activity and people would be doing crazy stuff inside that environment. But it would always be within the context of a game that was already made. It would always be in the context of a game that somebody else had developed. And then you're in that sandbox. Cave Story was like, because it was reaching that point where 3D graphics were coming in, the games were getting more complex, and Cave Story was just such a breath of fresh air, where it's like, no, you can do a more basic graphical game. You know, you can do this like, you know, more pixelated graphics, but still make a crazy good game as an indie developer now because the tooling is there. And I think that just really clicked a lot of people's heads into the right space where they're like, I don't need to be making mods anymore. I can make my own game. And I think that really catalyzed a huge amount of growth in that indie scene.
Yeah. So yeah, let me see. Some other games that I would probably recommend to somebody into the retro style. Well, of course, I got to mention VVVVVV.
I was just thinking that it's got to be Terry Kavanagh's game.
Yeah.
He's done more than just Kavanagh, that.
Honestly. But... Yeah, like Super Hexagon. You know, if you just want to, if you're into like that arcadey mood, like Super Hexagon is a great way to kill like 15 minutes and just piss yourself off. Excellent fucking music. But yeah, VVVVVV, that's a sort of Metroidvania-ish, I guess.
I almost think of it as like a puzzle game in my
head.
Yeah,
it's a, right, okay.
Just because like you have infinite lives and you're, each screen is kind of like a challenge where you got to like just know the right way to do it. But at the same time, like you do have to have quick reactions and there is character development along the way, you know, because you're saving other crewmates and stuff. It's just a very unique game. But it's great. You know, it's a great game to, if you are interested in like the gameplay that NES games offer, this is just going to be really, really great to play.
Yeah, and I think this was probably inspired by something like a Commodore 64 or, you know, I guess I would say like some kind of like British computer. Yeah, and it's also got this phenomenal driving soundtrack that is, it's just an amazing soundtrack. I play it on my phone a lot, like when I'm just driving around, you know, I'm playing it in the car. It's funny because the soundtrack is a lot more modern than the game looks. You know, I really think you could port this game to an NES. I could not possibly be that hard to port this game to an NES. It's a very simple mechanic. You only use one fucking button. You know, you have a direction pad and then you have the jump button and that's it. Well, it's not even jump. You just switch the gravity.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going from screen to screen. Every screen is a puzzle. You have to figure out how to get from one side to the next. It's called VVVVVV because there's spikes everywhere and the spikes will kill you as you touch them or if you touch any kind of enemy. And you play this little guy with a smiley face, Captain Viridian. If you've ever seen one of my avatars online, you've seen him before because I use him for my profile pic everywhere I am. So this game has kind of a special place in my heart. But yeah, it's just an incredibly satisfying, well-done game. It's everything Terry Cavanaugh makes is just incredibly well done.
It is.
Very talented guy. But yeah, the great fucking soundtrack. And you can get this game usually for like $5.
Just to say really briefly, one of the things that is really great about VVVVV that is, I think, something that tells me, it's like a signal for me of like why you would like games like this or what is really interesting about it, is that it reduces down the gameplay to a really core mechanic.
Right.
It like strips away anything that's not really related to the game. The graphics are basic, but the graphics are in service of this really honest and clear mechanic that you're just going to do every day. And like, you're going to like every level is just like oriented around this gravity switch and the spikes. And you can get this great mileage of a great game out of 90% just being that. So when I'm thinking about other games to recommend, I'm thinking about what other games are like really stripped back, really clean games that have just nothing extra, you know, no fat on it. It's just like the game and that's it. You were going to say something else, though.
Well, now I'm wondering about that question, because I feel like there should be...
I feel like there's something else there that's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't quite think of it.
Well, there's Celeste.
Celeste is a great game. I still play the Pico 8 version of that all the time.
Right. That is a pretty simple-to-understand game. It really is one of those, like, simple-to-learn, difficult-to-master kind of games, because you're really just jumping. That's it. You have no attacks. We talked about this a little bit in the lizard episode, but it's sort of like VVVVVV in the sense that you're trying to get from one side of the screen to the other. Every screen is a puzzle, and it does have a retro aesthetic. You know, it's definitely a modern game, but it does have a retro look to it. It's got a charming story, but I think the story didn't super resonate with me, but the gameplay really did. Like, it is incredibly addictive gameplay. It is an incredibly challenging platformer. It's really tough, but it never feels unfair. Never. There was a great thread that Maddie Thorson, the game's creator, had on Twitter, where they talked about all of the little like quality of life, sort of like under the hood kind of stuff that they put in there just to make the game feel more fair. There's like coyote time, they call it, where you can walk off an edge and there's just a split second where you can still jump after you walk off the edge, like where the jump will work. And some games do that. And it's apparently in game dev world, it's called coyote time. You know, it's like Wile E. Coyote running off the cliff and holding up the sign. And then he could just jump off, you know, into the air. Yeah. You know, some games do that. And they're the kind of games that feel a little bit more fair in their approach, perhaps. But there's other stuff like that that they've added in there. Beating that game, as difficult as it is so goddamn satisfying. When you get to the top of that mountain, man, it is like, it is just something else. It really does feel like you climbed a goddamn mountain, you know,
right?
Even though you're sitting there with your Switch out of shape on your couch, it really does feel like you just scaled a fucking mountain, or at least what I assume that would feel like.
Right. Also, huge shout out to the game soundtrack, Lena Raine, just like award winning soundtrack on
another.
That game.
Yeah. I mean, man, there's so much good fucking music out there. It's just, yeah. So I talked about VVVVVV. That was a French guy, I think. Lena Raine. Who did the soundtrack for VVV?
No, she did it for Celeste.
Yes, she did. Lena Raine. Right. Yeah. Chipsol did Super Hexagon and has done some other games. Chipsol, I listen to when I'm jogging now. Just really fucking amazing chiptune stuff. It's like, man. I mean, it also did Octahedron, a game called Octahedron.
Mm.
Let me see. What else? I'm looking at my Steam library because I have like literally 300 fucking Steam games. I've only played like maybe half of them. Oh, you know a game that is not on Switch, but I think it would really appeal to fans of retro games. So there was a Bionic Commando game that was back in 2009, I guess. It was like an update of the old Bionic Commando, but it was a modern kind of like 3D. It was like a PlayStation 3 game running around and shooting your big bionic arm. And, you know, it was gritty, right? It was kind of had some like edge to it, right? It's like Bionic Commando, but modern and dark. You know what I mean? So that one didn't get great reviews. The mechanics are kind of interesting, but that's not a retro game. That's a modern game. But as a promo for that game, that studio made an update of the NES Bionic Commando.
Mm.
A modern version of old school Bionic Commando. Like, you know, 2D. Well, they kind of did like a 2.5D thing. Same fucking mechanics. Almost exactly the same game, but like modern and just really fucking polished with like a whole new story to it. Like, well, yeah, like a modified story. And it is fun as fuck. It is honestly like, it's the best version of Bionic Commando I've ever played, but I really enjoyed Bionic Commando, but this was fucking fantastic. And I don't know if you can get it anymore. You can get it on Steam. I haven't seen it on any modern consoles. It was on PlayStation 3. Like, I got it through the store, PlayStation 3. I don't know if you can get it PlayStation 4 or not. But yeah, that one is really goddamn fun. It has, like, all new boss fights and new weapons. And it's, if you're a fan of the old Bionic Commando, like, this is, I think, the definitive way to play that game. I wish it were easier to get now. I would love to see, like, a modern release, like a limited run doing one of these or something. But yeah, I'd love to get this on Switch, but until that happens, that's a good one to seek out. You can get it on Steam still. I think it's a little bit difficult to run, but let's see, what's something else?
I'm just trying to think of other...
We're going to miss a lot of
titles. We're going to get like...
I can't believe you didn't mention blah. Why didn't you tell him about Undertale? I've never fucking played Undertale.
Well, we'll have to just put in something that says like... Hey, you know, this is only part one of that.
I'm looking at my Steam list. Apparently, I own Undertale. I had no fucking idea.
There you go.
You know, another genre that is very retro that I've really been getting into lately is shoot 'em ups. So, you know, shooters, shoot 'em ups, you know, in the Gradius mold, right?
Mm.
I've been watching a channel called Shmup Junkie on YouTube. I never watch YouTubers. Somehow I found this guy. I think I was following on him on like Instagram or something. He is obsessed with the TurboGrafx, which is like, I was interested in that because that's a console that I used to have and I wanted to learn more about it. Like, he just did a video where he actually reviewed every single shoot 'em up on the TurboGrafx 16. And the way that console was made, it, for some reason, shoot 'em ups were extremely popular on that console. Just the way that the console could process it, like it could handle all that crazy processing that you would need for that type of game.
Hmm.
So there's a whole library of absolutely classic shoot 'em up titles on the TurboGrafx 16. But so I've started to get back into this genre because it was a genre that kind of disappeared up its own ass for a long time because it started catering to people who were experts at that type of game. And it was really hard for people who weren't experts to get into those. But a lot of more modern shoot 'em ups have easier modes, and they have like training modes and things like that. And some of them even have like kids modes where your kid can play it. So some of these have actually been like released. Like M2 has been doing a lot of these. M2 is a studio out of Japan that does these really fantastic modern ports of retro games, and they have a real thing for shooters. So like M2 just did the Alesta collection.
Oh my God, that is so good. Isn't it fantastic?
Yeah, so not only did they port those, the Sega Master possibly, System and the Game Gear games.
Yeah, that is possibly one of the best Game Gear games I've ever played.
Alesta 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they got the old Compile guys together. Compile was the developer who made a lot of these classic shoot-em-ups. They got a lot of these guys together, and they made a fucking brand new Sega Game Gear game and released it in 2020 as part of this Alesta collection. And it is, you know, it is like super low resolution because it's off of fucking Game Gear.
Right.
You know, it's extremely retro. There's only two buttons that you use on the directional pad. And it is fun as fuck. And it is so goddamn good.
That's the thing. It's like, it's just a purity of the gameplay, you know? Like, it's just
such a good
idea that you don't need to dress it up with anything else. It's just fun.
Yeah, and I think a good shoot 'em up is honestly just timeless. Like, I can play Zanuck or something from the NES, and it doesn't feel like it's aged that much. Really, right. A lot of those games haven't.
So I'm looking through this in a couple of different ways. First of all, I started just like doing like looking for different games that are like Cave Story and Celeste, and a couple of popped out that I haven't played but I know are really popular, like Super Meat Boy. So Super Meat Boy, Binding of Isaac, Shovel Knight. But I think it's almost like meme worthy, like how they're just like, oh yeah, Shovel Knight's like a NES kind of, like we even see it on the Discord, like people being like, oh yeah, Shovel Knight, yeah, it's like it's a NES game, right?
People think it's right. But you know, if you hadn't played any indie games, you know, if you hadn't played any modern games in 15 years, like those would definitely be something to check out. Hollow Knight is another one that I really enjoyed. I have not finished it yet. I've only gotten about halfway through it, but it is a modern game with a really interesting art style. It definitely has retro bones to it, and it's very much a Metroidvania, very kind of dark atmosphere. It has kind of a Castlevania, almost like a cartoony Castlevania feel to it. Yeah, that's another one another Metroidvania that I think is really good. Also, Switch has, M2 did these, they're called Sega Ages, and they're old Sega games throughout Sega's back catalog. Like, they've done updates of Master System games and Genesis Mega Drive games and even like arcade games, but they've updated them with like some modern comforts. Every single one of those, that you can get them for $8 each in the eShop on Switch. They all go on sale a lot. Every single one of those is fucking great. And it's not just like Sonic the Hedgehog. Let me see. What are some of them I have here? Hold on. Oh my God. I'm looking at my Switch library and there's so many games I forgot to mention. I play way too many goddamn video games. I'm telling you what. Okay. Yeah. Here's just some stuff they released. I was talking about shoot 'em ups. So they've got, they did an updated version of Thunder Force 4 that they call Thunder Force AC. That's fantastic. They've got Thunder Force 3 on there. Space Harrier, Outrun, Gain Ground, Puyo Puyo, if you're into that, Shinobi. And every single one of these is an excellent fucking modern port. You know, they've all got little quality of life improvements, like maybe easy modes or practice modes or stuff like that. So those are really fun to pick up.
Yeah, so I'm just remembering a couple of games that I do really like that are pretty indie, kind of in that same vein. One is called Limbo, and it's
Limbo.
Limbo was such a good game, dude. It was like a puzzle platform, independent game, originally released for the Xbox, but it plays more like Abe's Odyssey, you know, like Oddworld or something like that, where you just kind of have to. Your character can't really do anything to like affect the area around you. You just kind of have to like work within the environment and then do things within that environment. It was just such a fun game. And like, it's black and white. The entire game is black and white. And
yeah,
I think
it has
that...
a really fascinating aesthetic to it. It's a very gory game. It's very bloody, yeah. But you don't see any of it. Like it's in silhouette.
That was like a fantastic game. I have to mention that. And then Braid is also just a really good game.
Braid, right?
Because right. It's just it's there's something about a game that takes a mechanic and does it so well that you can't actually copy it because you're just going to do it in an inferior way. And Braid did right. This thing with time travel in its gameplay that was so good that you couldn't make another game that had time travel in its gameplay because you would just be kind of not quite as good as Braid. At best, you would be like a different version of Braid. It was so original and executed so well that you just had this gem of a game that just stood out for itself from everything around it, made by indie developer Jonathan Blow, is I think the guy's name. Really interesting guy. Like, he would do live coding on YouTube or on Twitch of just like, here's how I code my games. Like, here's how I do it. And he would show you how he writes his code and like really, really open in his development experience. But super passionate about what his vision for the game was, very opinionated, very focused on a particular, you know, how the game should look, and a really incredible story. Like, the story in Braid is just, like, it absolutely, if you don't know the story of Braid, you are going to be surprised at the end. You will think, like, oh, this is a platformer where you're going to save the princess, blah, blah, blah. You are floored when you really understand the true ending of that game. So yeah, I got to shout out those two games for sure.
Yeah, that's a game that I know a lot about, but I've never actually... I played it for, I don't know, not very long. For some reason, I didn't get into it, but I've heard people talk about that for years, and it is one that I eventually need to get back to, but yeah.
It's a hard game. It's kind of like Celeste in that like it's a very hard game, but you can finish it. It doesn't feel unfair. I will say that like the secret... extra stuff like that felt a little unfair to me. There was like some stuff in it that was very hard to get. There was like the equivalent of the B-sides in Celeste, and I didn't get all of those, but it is still an amazing game. I don't think it really takes away from how good the game is.
I was talking about Castlevania style games. So Igavania is a term that people use. It's for Koji Igarashi was the name of the guy who did. He was the developer, I believe, of Symphony of the Night and a lot of the handheld games that came after that that are in that style. And he made a modern game called Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. And I have not gotten to play that one yet. I hear it's really good. But what I did play is they did a promo for that game. It was a little 8-bit style platformer in the style of like a Castlevania 3. And that was called Bloodstained Curse of the Moon. And they actually did another one just recently, I think last year. But they are side-scrolling platformer, and it is 8-bit style. It's not an actual 8-bit game, but it has a lot of branching paths through levels and character changing. And if that Castlevania 3 style appeals to you, it's definitely in that same vein. So, nice. Yeah, I have gotten to spend some time with those. That's another good retro-style game. Okay, I'm just going to start naming shit off my list here.
Yeah.
The Shantae games. Shantae, of course, was for the Game Boy Color. One of the last games released for the Game Boy Color. And in fact, if you want to get a cartridge of it now, it's like a cartridge only. It costs like $500, I think. Yeah, they've done several of these Shantae games. And they all have kind of a retro feel to them. Most of them are kind of Metroidvania inspired. There was one called Half Genie Hero, Shantae the Half Genie Hero, and that was more of a platformer, I guess I would say, sort of like a Mega Man style or something like that. They're a lot of fun. They're cute. The mechanic there is you're a genie and she whips bad guys with her hair, but they're funny games.
Oh my gosh, really... I didn't know what you were talking about until you mentioned the whipping with the hair, and then I got it.
You had no idea what I was talking about. Yeah. No, she's got a little genie and she's got purple hair and she whips bad guys with her hair. My daughter thinks these games are awesome.
Yes.
Like she loves them. But yeah, they're really well written. They're funny games, especially Pirate's Curse. And just a really good, and it has a Super Nintendo style to it. The more modern ones have looks like more of a cartoon style, but the earlier ones have an old chunky Super Nintendo style. Yeah, man. I don't know. I'm thinking about Shmup's Super Hydora. Did I even mention that? That's another good one. Fuck. There's just too many goddamn games. I'm telling
you. I mean, I don't think we have to make a comprehensive episode in one. I think it's more just like we're talking about somebody who likes NES games. What games should they play now? I mean, like for me, if you like NES games, you like playing those games, it's like, yeah, River City Ransom is like a type of game that you want to play. Or maybe like a Battletoads kind of game, right? Maybe like puzzle games, right? Plenty of puzzle games.
Puzzle games. What's a good puzzle? There's a really good one I played lately called Witch and Wiz. Have you heard of this one?
I don't know. Is that Hat Muson? Is that the name of the guy who makes it?
Something like that. I'm not really sure. I feel like, are we supposed to be playing that? Should we be doing that instead of making a fucking podcast? Well, is Bart playing that game?
If he has a migraine,
he got stuck on it today. What?
If he's a migraine, he's not playing it.
Oh, that's right. Maybe the game gave him a migraine. Oh, that's why he's not on the podcast tonight. I don't think the game would give him a migraine.
I don't think it's
not that hard.
And it's not, there's no like flashing, like epileptic seizure inducing.
Right.
Things.
So is that enough games maybe to give somebody
I think you've got enough of this.
That's a lot of fucking games that we talked about. And I didn't even get to like half of them that I wanted to talk about. You know, I think this is kind of a fun kind of talking about indie retro-ish games, retro-inspired games that I think have affected the two of us.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, it kind of colors my perception of modern games. And when I look back at a lot of the homebrew that's coming out right now, it's really interesting to see how people take these old formats, you know, these games that have a certain, these tropes of these old consoles and these old platforms, and adjust them for modern sensibilities, you know, and the way people design games now.
Yeah.
And I think I understand that better because I have played a lot of these modern indie games.
I agree.
So it's like if I play something modern and, you know, I can look back and I can say, okay, well, this game does that. And that reminds me of an indie game that I played, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe that's where they got the idea for this. I don't know. But
playing
more modern games better informs my experience of playing homebrew, honestly.
Yeah. I also want to just like caveat, I know that some of the things that we have suggested are maybe obvious to certain people. But I think it's really important to state that like they're not obvious to everybody. Like not everybody coming into this knows that these are the obvious games to play, and that it's like, oh yeah, obviously Limbo. I know that game so well. How could you even think to mention it? It's just like part of the canon of indie games. It's like, yeah, I know. It's like it's an award winning game. Like the developers were celebrated for it at the time, and they've, you know, obviously made money from it. But like, that doesn't mean it's not worth mentioning now in 2022 and saying to somebody who's fresh into the scene, like, hey, you should really play this game.
You know, there are so many indie games, though, is that I don't even know that you can say that there is kind of a canon of indie games.
That's very true. Just,
it's more like specific genres, you know, you might be able to make that argument. But God, there are just so many indie games out there right now. And they're cross-platform. You know, I feel like, especially if you're into indie games, they're becoming sort of timeless. You know, like you can play Cave Story today on a Switch and it doesn't feel dated at all. It feels like it could have come out yesterday, you know, but it's like, that's like a 15-year-old, it's almost 20 years old.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, pretty much any of these games that we just talked about, I mean, like, I wouldn't say any of them would feel dated if you played them today. I think they would feel totally fresh, every single one of them. Anyway, I can't think of any more. I think I'm probably done talking about this.
I feel like that's good, dude. I feel like there's something there in what we've talked about, and it's probably to be continued. There's probably more to be said when Bart's migraine's finished.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think anybody listening to this who is just like pissed off that we didn't mention a game, like, should definitely shoot us an email about it. And we could totally do like sequels to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, with other people's contributions. Because Lord knows, I only have so much time to play games. And especially now that we're playing homebrew, like at least half of my game playing is taken up by homebrew now.
Yeah.
So I'm not playing as many indie games over the last couple of months as I used to. So if we keep this up, I'm definitely going to need some help from outside keeping track of some of this shit. So anyway, I guess this has been an extra episode of the Homebrew Game Club. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HB Game Club. You can find me, Nick, on Twitter at dvertov and Instagram. I'm on Instagram. Please join our Discord if you are interested in hanging out with us. You can find a link to that at homebrewgameclub.com, or you can find links to that through our Twitter page. You can find Connor on Twitter at CONORNASH, and you can find Bart, who is not with us today, at Clever Username Needed on Instagram. Should I say anything else?
Looking forward to our next episode, our next real episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we'll be back with our next real episode, which is going to be on Witch and Wiz for the NES. You can find that at itch.io. You can get that game, or you can actually play it for free in your browser. I totally forgot about this. It's at PyPacker. Are you familiar with this?
This, you mentioned it like in a text, and I was like, this looks awesome. Let's do more of this.
Yeah, so like we could play like NES games online, like together. If we wanted to play like a two-player game, like we could do it that way. They have Micromages on there. I want to see if we can maybe like play like a four-player Micromages online.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I think that's probably, you know, next time we do an impromptu episode like this, we should probably try and do something like PyPacker, because that's just like a good excuse to try it at the same time.
Yeah, and do like kind of a mini review of it or something.
Yeah.
All right, well, maybe we'll do that. Anyway, all right, I'm going to let you go, and I think I'm going to get to playing Witch and Wiz again.
So. Yeah. And I will talk to you soon. Peace out.
Okay, sounds good. Bye.
Bye.